Here's a sort of a seasonal quiz about presents, economics, and laws. Suppose you're in California, wanted to ship holiday gifts to friends in Hawaii and in Australia. Which shipment do you think would cost more? The trip to Australia is much longer, but unless you're using next-day air delivery, it's also probably cheaper. The reason is a 100-year-old shipping law known as the Jones Act. A recent conference in Washington, D.C. explored the law's impacts on Hawaii and other parts of the United States that are separated from the mainland. HBR's Ryan Finnerty tells us more.
In the age of Amazon, many consumers have come to expect free shipping. But if you live in Hawaii, you're paying for shipping whether you have Prime or not. Around 80% of goods on Hawaii's shelves come from somewhere else, and most of them came here on a ship. Ships arriving from a foreign port have to clear U.S. customs upon arrival. But ships coming from elsewhere in the U.S. also have rules. Those rules come from a 1920 law commonly known as the Jones Act. That was the topic of a recent symposium hosted by the libertarian Cato Institute, which describes itself as dedicated to the principles of individual liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Michael Hansen is with the Hawaii Shippers Council and attended that conference.
The Jones Act is, in its most narrow definition, is Section 27 of the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. And that section of the law requires for that a vessel be U.S.-built, U.S.-flagged, U.S.-owned, and U.S.-crewed in order to carry cargo from one domestic point to another.
So if your Amazon package came on a ship from a warehouse on the U.S. mainland, it's required to come on a ship built in the United States, owned and operated by an American company, and crewed by American citizens or residents. That drives up the cost of shipping.
The main cost driver is the cost of the ships themselves. Typically, when you talk about your large seagoing ships, say a container ship or a tanker, the kind of ship that would come from the U.S. mainland to Hawaii with cargo, those vessels will cost, built in the U.S., about five times what they cost in, say, South Korea. The Asian countries of Japan, South Korea, and China build over 90% of the world's seagoing ships today.
So why do ships made in the USA cost more than foreign imports? Unlike other manufacturing industries, the answer isn't cheap labor.
They build in series production. They have the economy of scale that allows them to reduce the cost of each ship.
Economy of scale means that the more you make of something, the more efficient you can be in production, lowering the overall cost. More expensive ships mean that American shipping companies need to charge more on domestic routes to cover those costs. This hits certain places more than others.
The cost of domestic shipping in the United States puts a burden on not only Hawaii, but Alaska, Guam, and Puerto Rico. There's a number of ways the costs are increased. One is that because the ships are so expensive to build in the United States, you have an artificial shortage of ships. We don't have all the kinds of vessels that would be available in the world fleet, for example. And the capital cost of the ship is much higher. So this has to be amortized and included in the freight rate that they're charging whoever the cargo owner is shipping the cargo from the West Coast to here.
If you live on one of the neighbor islands, there is almost no avoiding this Jones Act surcharge. That's because everything coming into Hawaii via ship first makes a stop at the port of Honolulu, an American city. That means that your new mattress coming from China will be transferred to a more expensive Jones Act-compliant ship for its trip to Kahului, Kauai High, or Niuliuili. Products coming from the U.S. mainland get hit twice. That impacts Hawaii consumers, but it especially impacts Hawaii-based manufacturers. Bob Gunter is the president and CEO of the Kaloa Rum Company. Kaloa Rum was featured at the Cato Conference in Washington.
Kaloa Rum Company was founded in 2006. We began bottling rum here on the island of Kauai in September of 2009. We currently distribute our products in 25 states within the United States and also in Canada, Japan, and New Zealand. Our primary distillery is located in Kalaheo on Kauai, where all of our distilling, blending, bottling, and packaging is done. The rum that we make is made with Hawaiian cane sugar. We purchased 190 tons of raw sugar from HCNS in Maui from their last harvest a year and a half ago. and we currently are drawing down on that supply now. We have approximately 2 years' supply of that sugar remaining on hand. We are supplementing that with cane now that we are growing here on Kauai. We're expanding our cane cultivation efforts and hope to eventually have upwards of 100 to 150 acres of cane in the ground within the next several years.
Although Kalua Rum doesn't need to import its main ingredient, it does need to bring in a lot of other items.
We do import most of our input supplies and some of our other ingredients. For example, glass bottles. There are no glass bottles produced in Hawaii, so all of the rum that we bottle in all sizes, those bottles have to be imported from the mainland U.S. We also import and ship in by ocean freight caps, corrugated cartons for the cases, and other ingredients and supplies.
And all of that has to come in on a Jones Act ship. But Gunter's company also gets hit on the back end. Kalua brand rum has to be shipped to Honolulu for distribution to the U.S. mainland and foreign markets.
Just to give you an example, we shipped a container load of rum to Australia several years ago, and we were not able to ship directly because there's no service between Hawaii and Australia. The only option was to ship first to the West Coast, and the freight cost for that container going to Los Angeles was approximately $5,900, and then the rate from Los Angeles to Sydney was approximately $1,900. So obviously the distance, the geographical distance between California and Sydney is greater than between Hawaii and California, and there was an obvious wide disparity in the cost. So we look at that as an example of the impact, the disparate impact that the Jones Act has on us here in Hawaii, because it results in what seems to be exorbitant freight rates.
Michael Hansen from the Shippers Council said the options to reach foreign ports from Hawaii have improved in recent years.
We have a direct weekly service from Asian ports to Hawaii, which is a pretty good service. It's operated by Ocean Network Express, otherwise known as ONE. And we have a service from Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji to Hawaii that operates on an every two-monthly basis, but provided by Hapag-Lloyd. It's a German company. And they proceed from Hawaii to the U.S. West Coast and then back around to Australia. And that service, they bring a good deal of the imports that we see from Australia and New Zealand land with that particular service. And it's also possible to ship from Hawaii to Australia or New Zealand using that same service on what are known as foreign flag freight rates.
Most economists agree that the Jones Act is the type of protectionist measure that helps a particular interest group at the expense of everyone else. In this case, it's the U.S. domestic shipbuilding and shipping industries that benefit, and we're unlikely to see a change in the law anytime soon.
I have spoken with some of our congressional delegations, or at least the staff, in Washington, D.C. The reaction was essentially that there was no interest in taking on this issue on behalf of Hawaii, that is, recommending any changes to the status quo.
The members of Hawaii's congressional delegation have historically opposed any changes to the Jones Act. Senators Brian Schatz and Mazie Hirono have both expressed opposition to repealing or modifying the law, as has Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. They have argued that maintaining a domestic shipbuilding industry is a national security imperative, and that changes to the Jones Act could impact hundreds of thousands of jobs around the country. During the 2018 campaign, the delegation's newest member, Congressman-elect Ed Case, expressed support for some kind of update to the 98-year-old law. I'm Ryan Finnerty for The Conversation.
If you want to check out more of the substance of that conference at the Cato Institute, we have links to the videos posted with this story. You can find it at hawaiipublicradio.org.